Effective immediately, an RSS feed for this podcast can be found at rss.littlebrotherpodcast.com. You can use this with your favorite podcatcher to bypass the aggregators. For Android users, I recommend using AntennaPod. Thanks to Dino for making that happen. From the studios of Wavefront Audiovisual Engineering in Schenectady, New York, this is Little Brother, the show where we talk about high technology, low intelligence, crime, greed, corruption, and all of the wonderful things that happen when you mix them together. Like any responsible little brother, we tell on Big Brother. My name is Chuck Ritter, and I'll be your host as we explore this world of the high tech. This is episode 136 of Little Brother for the 14th of October, 2023. Stay tuned. Little Brother is right around the corner. As always, I'd like to remind everyone that the opinions and views expressed in this program are strictly those of the participants, and not necessarily those of anyone else who may, for whatever reason, attempt to claim them. Responsible parties with an opposing viewpoint may request an opportunity for a rebuttal. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can write me at critter@littlebrotherpodcast.com, or you can post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcast.com. We got a lot to cover today, so let's get started. Dress codes have been a subject of debate in the U.S. Senate because clearly our elected officials have nothing better to do, such as dealing with the budget or the war in Ukraine or any of a million other things that matter. Apparently, the idea of John Fetterman showing up in shorts to perform his official duty is just too much to deal with. Well, the dress code was recently briefly lifted, leading to protests from several senators, including Rand Paul, a Republican of Kentucky. I find that amusing, since I thought he was supposedly a small L libertarian. Well, anyway, a photo has been making the rounds of Senator Paul in a bathrobe sitting on the steps of the Capitol in an apparent example of such protest. There's only one thing wrong. It's a complete fabrication. It is the product of the DALL-E generative AI, produced at the request of an ex-user named Jeff Charles. Speaking of fabrications, during Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's recent visit to New York to address the UN, a picture was making the rounds on the internet of a billboard in Times Square. In the picture, the billboard is done up in the familiar blue and yellow motif of the Ukrainian flag, but the words on it instead said, quote, "Glory to Urin," end quote. While this message may please water sports fans, it is clearly intended to be generally offensive towards Ukraine and Zelensky, which means that it is refreshing to know that the image was also a complete fabrication. Meta is introducing new AI assistants. The reporting is that Meta is using Facebook and Instagram posts to train the underlying AI.
Well, duh.
Meanwhile, on the other side of the pond, Norway is fining Meta $98,500 per day for user privacy breaches. They have also been banned from engaging in behavioral advertising. The ACLU has published a report about the increasingly pervasive use of surveillance technology in schools. In particular, the ACLU appears to be concerned about potential increases in discrimination against students and increased stress and anxiety, all while failing to make students safer. One of the critiques I've always had against schools, and this applies equally to public and private as I have attended both between kindergarten and high school, is that the ostensible objective is to prepare children to become adults ready to live in a free society. an education provided by spending our formative years living under a police state. How's that supposed to work anyway? Anyway, following the ACLU report, the state of New York has banned the use of facial recognition technology in schools. This makes permanent a moratorium that has been in place since parents in the Lockport Central School District out in the western part of the state filed suit against the district to halt the practice. Sound Thinking, a company formerly known as ShotSpotter, is a company based in Fremont, California, that specializes in hardware and software that work together to attempt to detect gunfire. According to a 2021 study in the Journal of Experimental Criminology, the effect has been negative. On police departments with a high call volume, it has resulted in a reduction, not in crime, but in the ability of police resources to respond to it. The reason they are in the news right now is that TechDirt is reporting on SoundThinking's acquisition of Geolytica, a company that produces crime predictive software. Meanwhile, Wired is reporting that a number of police departments across the country, and for their article they focused on Plainfield, New Jersey, have been experimenting with software that is intended to predict crime. So, guess what? That doesn't work either. They took a sample of about 23,000 predictions produced by the very same geolytical predictive policing software I just mentioned in the last item, and the success rate was, ready for this, less than half of 1%. That rounds to zero, which in my academic experience is what we call a failing grade. Last episode, I mentioned that MGM Casino had been hacked. I promised updates as they become available. However, the only news that I have at the time of taping is that their insurer has agreed to a $100 million payout. And finally, we end with the end of an era. In 1998, Netflix opened up as a DVD rental by mail subscription service, shipping out as their first disc a copy of the Tim Burton film Beetlejuice. Netflix is now better known as an online streaming service. However, the DVD and Blu rental by mail continued quietly in the background. On Saturday, September 28th, Netflix shipped out a copy of the Coen brothers' 2010 film True Grit, and with that, closed the era. That was the last one, and Netflix is now completely online. And those are the headlines. You're listening to Little Brother. Well, here we are again. It's time for another round of Who Got Pwnt? We have three in today's episode. First up, this one's a little unusual, partly because it is blatantly political, and partly because the pony didn't really get pwnt directly, but rather they had a supply chain issue. The subject is Canonical Limited, best known for their Linux distribution called Ubuntu. Canonical have withdrawn and will be re-releasing their desktop version 23.10 because of a malicious translation. Users of the distribution, who set the language to Ukrainian, would be greeted by offensive messaging rather than the usual "Welcome to Ubuntu, here's what's great about it" messaging that you typically see when installing the OS. The issue only affects the installer environment. If you've already installed the operating system from a defective release, there should be no further issues. This kind of makes me think of the Hungarian phrasebook sketch from Monty Python's Flying Circus.
Do you want
to come back to my place, bouncy, bouncy?
So we go from one political hack to another. The second pony this round is genetics testing company 23andMe. I've long had concerns about this sort of genetic testing on the grounds that you're voluntarily giving control of your genetic sequence to a third party, opening a can of privacy worms that I'm not going to discuss right now, but might at some point in the future. In a nutshell, though, if you submit your DNA to them, they will use it to determine, statistically, what your likely heritage is. There's a sequence that's usually found in Irish folks, so we'll predict that you're part Irish. Oh, here's a sequence we found that's usually Cherokee, so we'll predict that you're part Cherokee, and so on and so forth. It's all statistics, and in and of itself, that's actually kind of cool when you get past the privacy concerns. However, the privacy concerns are absolutely relevant for this pwn. It seems as though the attackers were taking an interest in particular in folks who were identified as Ashkenazi Jews. That's disturbing. While it is probably possible to come up with some sort of tortured but innocent explanation for this, Occam's razor dictates that those reasons are unlikely to be the correct ones. I really cannot help but be concerned about the motives of the attackers and how they may align with a racist political philosophy that we literally fought a fucking world war over. So yeah, now we have another reason not to use this sort of genetic testing. Sadly, we can do little to prevent our family from submitting theirs, which is also a threat to us as individuals. After all, if your siblings are of a particular race, well, you probably are too. All right, that was pretty heavy. How about a traditional run-of-the-mill pwn? Yeah, I do actually have one. Johnson Controls. They have allegedly gotten pwned since my last episode, and it shut them down hard. No manufacturing, no phones, dead. The outage also affected their subsidiaries York, Simplex, Tyco, Ruskin, Luxair, Coleman, and Grinnell. The attacker is believed to be the Dark Angels ransomware gang. Compared to the other two, well, that's kind of boring, really. How about a bit of good news? Net neutrality is back. For those not familiar, net neutrality is a feature that was briefly present on the internet thanks to efforts put forth by the Obama administration and, like so many other things done in that era, rolled back by the Trump administration. Net neutrality basically directed internet service providers to make the network connectivity that they provided behave in a way that we might reasonably expect it to. Put another way, putting a packet of data onto the network, it should be treated the same way regardless of where it is going, where it came from, or why. I mean, after all, that's what you're paying them for, right? Now, I understand that some folks may feel some reticence towards introducing government restriction into the mix, and I completely sympathize. Unfortunately, we still live in a world where the level of competition in most places is weak, if it's even there at all. In many parts of the country, there is only one viable option for internet access. Maybe, if you're lucky, you can sort of get by using a wireless provider instead of whoever the local cable company is. but the connection will have higher lag, more variability in the throughput, and may come with data caps. If you live in the middle of nowhere, that can be better than nothing, of course, but it isn't better than cable. Similar things can be said for satellite, regardless of whether we're talking about Hughes or Starlink, both of which also come with higher pricing. So, since the competition is so lacking, the option that's available is regulation. Now, this is good for us as end users, though, because it means that your internet provider is not making deals with content providers to make their service run faster to the detriment of others. Everyone gets treated the same way. After all, that's what you're paying for, right? Digital television has been with us for a while now. While most consumers these days are likely getting their television by streaming, and a decreasing number are getting it by some sort of conventional cable or satellite TV that most of us Gen Xers grew up with, picking up television with an antenna is still a thing. It's still something you can do for free, and thanks to the transition from analog to digital back in the '80s, it actually works pretty well in many places. So, before the digital transition, television, for the most part, was distributed in the U.S. using a standard called NTSC, and the move to digital TV involved switching from NTSC to a newer spec called ATSC, more specifically, ATSC version 1. It brought with it the ability for one TV station to carry multiple channels of content and for content to be delivered optionally with surround sound and in 1 or 2K resolution. It was a big step up. On top of that, it didn't need for the signal to be as strong for a decent picture, so it saved energy at the TV stations, and it also made it easier for you to pick up a usable signal with no static. Now, for the most part, to watch ATSC version 1, all you have to do is plug an antenna into any off-the-shelf television made in the last decade and a half or so, and you have it. You might have to do a little extra work on the antenna if you live in a fringe area, or if your home has aluminum siding or foil-wrapped insulation, but it's still very easy to get this free signal. Now, there was a proposed specification for ATSC version 2, however, it never materialized, and some of the features were backported into version 1, so it's very much like IP version 5. It's essentially not a thing. That brings us to the current situation. ATSC version 3 is specified. It's sometimes called next-gen television. It's on the books. A number of TV stations have actually started to broadcast in it, but it's not compatible with ATSC version 1 televisions. So stations that make the transition, like WCWN here in Schenectady, have made their content available by adding their channels to other stations' streams in exchange for carrying those other stations' streams in ATSC 3. What ATSC 3 would bring to the table is better audio and video codecs, such as HEVC for video, for instance. It brings more bandwidth per station, around 57 megabits versus the almost 20 you get from ATSC 1, both allowing for more content per stream, and now TV is available in 4K. However, the major downside of ATSC 3 has been the introduction of digital restrictions management. In a nutshell, they want to do a technological end run around our legal ability to record and store those recordings on devices of our choosing. Given that this ability was given in exchange for the very airwaves on which they broadcast, it can be viewed as reneging on a deal. However, that feature has caused technical problems in the rollout. Apparently, it's difficult to get it right without locking people out of miscoded content and annoying end users, I mean, we already knew that from all of the prior attempts that usually went along with physical media, such as DVDs and Blu-ray. So why this was a surprise, I have no idea. It doesn't matter, though. It has been my opinion for some time that since there was no mandate that new televisions support it, that ATSC version 3 would just never get adopted. As it happens, very few TV manufacturers have included it in new televisions, largely owing to the difficulty in implementing the DRM I mentioned a minute ago. Pretty much, LG has been the big name on that front. And that brings me to the current news, which is that LG is dropping that support. I can't say that I'm surprised, and I also cannot say that I am upset about it. As usual, we'll end the show with a fail of the fortnight. However, less usual, this is going to be a long one. In fact, I'm just going to fade down space reggae right here because the song is just not long enough. I am awarding the fail of the fortnight this episode to the state of New York for its mangled execution of an Amber Alert. On Saturday, September 30th, a 10-year-old girl named Charlotte Senna was abducted from Morrow State Park in upstate New York, about 150 miles north of New York City along Interstate 87. As I understand it, she and her family were camping there, and she was out riding her bicycle. The family were getting ready to leave the park, and she asked to take one last loop around the park road before they got in the car. When she had not returned in a timely fashion, they went looking for her. They found her bicycle laying by the road. She, however, was nowhere to be seen. This sad and dangerous event was what led to the state authorities setting off an Amber Alert. Okay, so for those not familiar or needing a memory jogger, an Amber Alert is a type of message that gets sent out using the emergency alert system. They are named for Amber Renee Hageman, a 9-year-old who was abducted while riding her bike in Arlington, Texas in 1996. The general idea is to use every available channel of disseminating information to alert everyone in the area to be on the lookout for the missing child or whatever vehicle that they are believed to be in. It's a great idea because it puts lots of eyes on the problem if you can just get the word out. If. So, roughly 12 hours or so after Charlotte Senna was abducted from Morrow State Park, that's overnight, by the way, they finally pulled the trigger. The alerts went out on Sunday morning to anyone located in northeastern New York State along the I-87 corridor from about Albany to the Canadian border. The Canadian border. Think about that for a second. So, the park is right near I-87. I-87 intersects I-90 in Albany, which then connects to I-88 in Schenectady, and so that alone represents 5 different directions that this little girl could have been taken in, and been in Ohio, or Pennsylvania, or any New England state, into Quebec, Ontario, New Brunswick, by the time they finally got the fucking lead out and sent the fucking alert. That's strike one. So, the alert goes out mid-morning on Sunday, the 1st of October. Phones all make that grating emergency alarm sound. By the way, That sound is a stroke of genius because it is grating and it will get your attention. And the following message appears on the screens of phones everywhere. Child abduction Amber Alert, October 1, 9:47 a.m. Amber Alert. Go to https://amber.ny.gov for more information or check your local news. More information? How about any fucking information? You want everyone to know what to be looking for, right? Let's talk about who is cut out of the equation by sending the message this way. We'll start with anyone carrying a flip phone. Yes, my friends, the boomers are still out there among us. But so too are people who have decided that they do not need anything more than this. I do not care about the reasons for their technological choices, and neither should you. Except when it comes time to make information accessible, this doesn't work. All right, so they are out. Who else? How about anyone who does not have a data plan? Oh yeah, they're out there too, you know. Anyone who has a smartphone but lacks a data plan will need to go find Wi-Fi to connect to find out what the hell it is that the emergency alert is trying to tell them. Who else? How about folks who are roaming? If you are in that stretch of the state and you're carrying a phone with T-Mobile service or any MVNO that uses T-Mobile, you have zero access to data because you're roaming on AT&T and data is not part of the roaming agreement. How about people carrying phones from Rogers or from Bell Canada? We do get quite a few Canadian visitors in that area, as it is both a beautiful area and a prime corridor to get to New York City. And yes, they too are roaming. And if they've got data coverage at all, you had better believe it's going to be costly, which will also introduce an element of hesitancy to click a web link. You know what this reminds me of? It's like Holly, the computer from Red Dwarf. Check it.
Emergency. There's an emergency going on. Still going on. And it's still an emergency.
All right. On TV, that's funny. In real life, that is as handy as a fart in a glove. So that's strike two. All right. Good news. This message comes in. I'm at home. I have AT&T for a carrier. I am also on my home Wi-Fi here in Schenectady, which is delivered by fiber. It is super fast and super reliable, and my phone has identified that the URL in the emergency announcement is a link. Okay, fine. I click it, and it does nothing because the phone's locked. Okay, fine. I'll just unlock my phone and... All right, where'd the message go? Yeah, it's gone. It disappeared. If someone technologically savvy like me had that problem, what's Grandpa gonna have, huh? Now, thankfully, some folks that I know were discussing this on Signal, and Fongaboo came through with a screenshot, so I typed the URL manually into my phone. It's also where I got the URL to tell you a minute ago. And I was presented with a page that did not render on mobile. I have a map of some sort, identifying a bunch of zones in the state that are numbered, but absolutely no information on it except for the zone numbers. Under that, there is a list of numbers. Nice, neat, vertical stack. And under that is a similar vertical stack of checkboxes, two of which are checked off. Scrolling down a little, I finally get to the meat of the message, but for fuck's sake, if you're going to send content out to mobile devices, maybe check that it renders on mobile devices or something, you know? And now, after way too much fucking around, I finally find out that a little girl was abducted 12 hours ago and could be several states away or even in a different country by the time I got this information. What use is that? Okay, so out of morbid curiosity, I looked up the information on a desktop computer and the page rendered just fine there. The map was at the top of the page, and under that was a row of numbers with a checkbox underneath each one, and two of them were checked off. But let me ask you, what fucking bureaucrat thought this was an efficient way to convey this information? Seriously, that's a lot of fucking visual noise. Cut the bullshit and just put the information that says something like, quote, along the Interstate 87 corridor north of Albany, end quote. Seriously, how hard is that? It would take up a lot less space, and it would convey the information concisely and in a way that anybody that's in the area would grasp. Assuming, of course, that the abducted girl was even still in that area. Under all of this was five paragraphs of text. Ever hear of an executive summary? We need one right here, right here. It would say, quote, Charlotte Senna, a 9-year-old white female child with long blonde hair, was abducted from Morrow State Park in Gansvoort. She is 5'1", weighs about 90 pounds, and was last seen wearing an orange tie-dye Pokemon shirt, dark blue pants, black Crocs, and a gray bicycle helmet, end quote. That's what the first paragraph should read. Instead, it blathers on about how the state police have issued an Amber Alert. Fine, do that, but do that after you've got the important part out. So that's strike three. Now, in fairness, an attempt was made to make it a little bit better. A little bit before 4 o'clock in the afternoon, they issued an update that said, and I quote, height/eye color. That's it. That's the entire message. All of the actual information was cut off somehow. Speaking as a father who wonders sometimes how his children made it into adulthood, I see this level of fuck up and I am just dumbfounded. We have all of this brilliant technology at our disposal, and is this really the best we can do? The FEMA test that ran a few days later was 10 times as informative. By the way, some of you are probably wondering if the story has a happy ending. Well, no thanks to what I have just described, yes it does. The little girl was found to be in possession of her suspected abductor, Craig Ross Jr., in a camper trailer in Milton. He had dropped a ransom note at the family's home on Monday morning, from which a fingerprint was used to identify the suspect. She was found in good health and is home, safe and sound, with a story that she can tell her therapist someday. Little Brother is produced, recorded, edited, and hosted by yours truly, Chuck Ritter. Special thanks to Fongaboo and the crowd at Helix for web hosting support. Thanks once again to Dino for doing the thing.
He did the thing!
Shout out to the Albany 2600 group. Special thanks to Azriel, Fongaboo, Misdemeanor, David, Joe Cadillac, DOA, Snackness, and Thriller at Play for story leads. Additional thanks to the axe that slayed me for contributing her voice to the episode.
Well, duh.
Our headline music is Adrenochrome by Super Action 80. Our Who Got Pwned music is Analog Summer 3 by Asarhad. Our Fail of the Fortnight music is Space Reggae by Zap. Our opening theme music and bumper is Around Chaos by Heatseeker. And our closing theme is Space Debris by Captain Image. If you have questions or comments about this podcast or want to join the conversation, please drop me an email at critter@littlebrotherpodcasts.com or post a message on the blog at littlebrotherpodcasts.com. Join us next time when Little Brother tells on Big Brother once again. Episode 137 will drop on the 28th of October. Stay safe and be well.